It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is indeed another edition, episode 705 of the Rico Bronya. This series sucked. Now, it could have been worse. They could have got swept. This could have been season is over for the 500th time edition of the Rico. Fortunately, the Mets were able to salvage game three of this series, but let's not sugarcoat it. Let's not beat around the bush. This was a bad series for the New York Mets. I am glad they escaped. We'll talk all about game three. Juan Soto, clutch home run. Devin Williams and the Met bullpen did an outstanding job. Christian Scott settled down after a very tough beginning. All that stuff is true. But at this stage of the season, here in the middle of June, they kind of need to win series. And even though Francisco Lindor is not back yet, and surely you can try to tell yourself, well, when Lindor comes back, this lineup will be better, and certainly on paper it would be better, you still need to win series. And they lost the series at home to the Cardinals, a team that, despite their record, I don't think is that good. So before we get into each game, before we give you our traditional Rico Bronya features, like the I'm the man right now star of the series and the net negative, I think the overview is that this was a very disappointing three-game series to start the homestand. Six games against two playoff teams, or at least currently playoff teams, in St. Louis and Atlanta. And I said before this homestand began, they went 3-3 on the West Coast trip. Fine, you'll accept it. Now you have to start to cut into this monstrous deficit that you've created. And they lost 2 out of 3. That's not good. And when you look at how they got there and how they lost the first two games of this series, it was just the typical bad stuff that we've grown accustomed to this season. Let's start with Freddy Peralta. Freddy Peralta, despite putting up numbers really up until his last couple of starts that sort of matched his career numbers, I think we all have kind of agreed he's been a disappointment. What we saw on Tuesday night, it's just unacceptable. It's just not good enough. And it's frustrating because he didn't get off to the worst start in the world. You know, there have been times this year where Freddie will get ticked up early. His pitch count will be high and then he'll settle down and you'll look down and he'll figure out a way to get through 5 or 6 innings, allowing 2 or 3 runs and keeping you in the game. He retired the first 6 of 7 guys. It was just a hit batsman to Yvonne Herrera. That was it over the first 2 innings. And then he allows, and this is what kills you, this is what really, really frustrates you, the bottom of the Cardinal order in Nolan Gorman and Nathan Church to beat him and set up a rally in the 3rd inning that just kept getting worse and worse. He walks Nolan Gorman on 5 pitches to start the 3rd inning. Cannot happen. He gives up a double to Nathan Church, and now you're facing 2nd and 3rd, nobody out, with the top of the order coming up, and immediately gives up a 2-run single to J.J. Weatherholt. What's his name again? He's having a great year. He's a good rookie. I remember watching him in spring training. I think we saw him when we did our Rico at spring training. Or wait, did we see the Cardinals? I can't even remember. Maybe it was a spring training game I was watching. But then he gives up the big RBI double to Jordan Walker. You've got that ground out at 2nd base in which there was some very aggressive base running by Yvonne Herrera and the Cardinals were able to steal a 4th run. And it was just, this is your ace and he needs to be better than that. And unfortunately, when you have a 4-run inning, you need an offense that's going to respond. And the offense didn't do much. They made Dustin May look like a superstar. And really, it turned into just a non-competitive game. And those are always the worst. I know that guys are trying. We always think sometimes when teams don't hit, it's like they're not trying. Oh, they're trying. They're just bad. And you look at their offensive opportunities. A.J. Ewing had a pretty good at-bat in which he ripped a double with 1 out in the 2nd inning. Marcus Semien has a long at-bat. He strikes out. Brett Beatty strikes out. And so they miss out on an opportunity in the 2nd inning with a runner on 2nd and 1 out. Typical of them. Carson Bench bounces into a double play after they get a 1-out hit from Francisco Alvarez. And it's amazing that Francisco Alvarez is back. I do add that point that while Alvarez is still like the guy we're hoping is going to get better and is going to put together a career, Like, he's not a prospect anymore, but you almost view him sometimes as a prospect. I give this man a lot of credit. He gets hurt. He's supposed to be out for an extended period of time, and he comes back sooner than you think. And in his first at-bat, he gets a base hit. But the offense was just completely limp. They had those scoring opportunities I mentioned. They had a runner on first and one out in the fourth when Juan Soto came through with a base hit. A.J. Ewing came up with that bloop hit. And then Marcus Semien hit a ball about 400 feet. And Nathan Church made that Willie Mays basket-style catch. But after that, they had no opportunity. They put a guy in scoring position after that scoring chance that they missed out on in the fourth inning. And sometimes it feels with this offense that while you can point to a play like that, like a really good defensive play by Nathan Church, the center fielder, and say, ah, that's bad luck. Boy, the Mets hitting a bad luck. But it seems so many times that when they hit in a bad luck, then the bats just go into a slumber. And you watch this game on Tuesday, and I certainly felt this way. I don't think you're out of a game down 4-0. I don't even think you're out of a game down 6-0 in the bottom of the fifth inning, because I know you're a 3-run home run away from being back in the game. But with this offense, it feels different. With this offense, you're like, you are out of a game. So everything sucked on Tuesday. I mean, just really from top to bottom. Freddy Peralta giving up the 4 runs in the third inning and then the 2-run bomb to Alec Burleson in the fifth inning. So instead of letting the third inning be the one bad inning and, you know, putting together a not great but acceptable 6-inning, 4-run performance, he gives up 2 more runs, and while he gives them 6 innings, and according to Howie Rose, parade for Freddy Peralta. Remember, Howie said Freddy thinks he deserves a parade when he goes 6 innings. So that's not mocking of Howie. It's a mocking of Freddy. Despite going 6 innings, he allows 6 runs. That ain't good enough. And all of a sudden, you look up at Freddy Peralta's ERA and the stats, and they're not good enough. Not from a guy that you gave up 2 top 100 prospects for. Not for a guy that's supposed to be at the top of the rotation arm. And I couldn't believe, it almost felt not real, that it gets leaked out that Freddy Peralta wants a Max Fried contract. Okay. You know what I want? I want a Mike Francesa contract. Like, okay, I can want whatever I want. Doesn't mean I'm going to get it. Doesn't mean it's happening. That's adorable, Freddy. And I like him as a person. Like, he comes across like a really good dude, and he comes across like a guy that wants to be here. And he's not bad. I think the problem we're running into with Freddie is that he was acquired to be an ace. He's not an ace. And while the 2 prospects they gave up are not performing, bad news, Jet Williams is not playing well in AAA. My son is watching the Rico today, live studio audience. And Brandon Sproat does not pitch well at the major league level. I get that, and I want to point that out, but they still gave up a lot in theory. You know what I mean? It's not, even if they don't perform, even if those guys don't pan out to anything, you gave up 2 100 prospects for a rental. And the reason why it matters, even if they don't perform, is that those 200 prospects could have been traded for a different rental, for a different piece, for a different player, not a guy who has a 4 ERA and is clearly not an ace. So in a different world, like in different terms, Freddy Peralta would be okay. Middle of the rotation arm. You didn't give up 2 top prospects. He's not asking for Max Fried money. Under those circumstances, like, is he better than David Peterson? Yeah, but not as an ace. So everything about game one of this series completely sucked. Everything about it. Bad starting pitching. Joey Gerber came in and gave up a 7th run. I'm not going to really kill him for that. And the offense did absolutely nothing. Let's check the game one mailbag. I separate the Rico now sometimes into games. Keeps me very organized. So let's start this off with Aaron, who writes, Tuesday night's game. That's game one of the series. My beloved Riconians. Oh, I like that. Riconians. Oh, nah. Hey, now we're cooking. My beloved Riconians. Where do I begin? Stop me if you've heard this before. Peralta-ass can't go deep into a game. Mets can't score. Lifeless performance yet again. Man, aren't we glad we traded Sproat and Jet for Peralta-ass? Yes, Sproat has struggled, but still, the principle of trading 2 top 5 prospects for what will be a five-month rental is sickening. I'm no doctor, but the buy high, sell low strategy doesn't seem to make sense. It impresses me how the Mets successfully accomplished doing less with more. It needs to be studied. Truly, have you ever seen a team have access to seemingly infinite funds and be this horrid? I think a dented traffic cone can build a better team. This team is just so difficult to watch, and I'm a Jet fan. Save us, Evan, painfully loyal Met fan, Alex. I cannot save you. The only thing I can do, and I can promise, is to continue to Rico throughout a brutal season. It's the only thing I can do. That I can provide. I can provide analysis on games that you are no longer caring about. And I think it's because of the Knicks, because of the fact that they're in the NBA Finals and all the craziness around them. I don't know if the Mets have ever felt this irrelevant than they feel right now. And maybe that'll change once the Knicks either win an NBA championship or not. Like, it's back to baseball eventually. But it just feels irrelevant. Now, I'm still locked in, and the Raconians are still locked in. But I don't know. Maybe it's being on Sports Talk Radio and not uttering the word Mets for 2 weeks now or however long it's been. It does feel very rudderless. Ryan is a first-time emailer. He writes, hey, Evan, big fan of the Rico and the station. Appreciate it. First-time emailer. I'm sitting here during the bottom of the fifth inning in anger after watching another Freddy Peralta start go sour. To think him and his agent leaked a dollar amount a couple of days ago is laughable. Hitters look too comfortable and he looks too wild the second things start to go wrong. I'm losing all faith in him. Do you think he'll ever get back to a good place? Keep doing the Ricos. We're all going to need it. Thank you, Ryan. I will continue to do the Ricos. I think that it's the view of Freddy Peralta that's probably the biggest issue. It's how do we view him? We view him as an ace because of what they gave up and the fact that he's a free agent at the end of the year and the fact that his agent is leaking dollar amounts. I think he's an okay middle-of-the-rotation arm. At least that's the way he's pitched this season. And I know I've gotten a few people who have pushed back on that, saying you're being too harsh. He's better than that. All right, what is he, a two? A three? Whatever he is, they need him right now to be better. Because I am not concerning myself with the offseason or the kind of money he wants. I'm concerning myself with the right now. And the right now, especially when you're in a rotation that features two spots that are being used by bulk arms, right? Two of the spots. Another one of the spots is a really raw young arm in Christian Scott. And the other arm is a rookie who's kind of going through it at times in Nolan McClain. Like, they need Freddy Peralta more than ever to just be rock solid. So I give him credit for Tuesday in this regard. He went six innings. But six runs isn't good enough. And what should not be buried is that the offense did absolutely nothing. They managed five base hits. They had three at-bats with runners in scoring position. Now, I'm looking back at my scorecard to even find where those three at-bats were. They had two at-bats in the second inning with a runner on second and had back-to-back strikeouts. They had one at-bat in the fourth inning with guys on base. That was the Simeon flyout. Other than that, in the fifth inning on, they did not get a runner in scoring position. And I think that's why Tuesday was so ugly. Everything sucked. Then you get to Wednesday. Now, I consumed Wednesday's game very oddly. Wednesday was the night of game four of the NBA Finals. It was also a night in which my kids had a concert. So I got home at about 8:30, and I watched the Knick game. And I figured, you know, I want to give the Mets the proper attention, which what a stupid mistake that is. So I'll focus on the Knicks, and then I'll get to the Mets either when I'm done with the Knicks or at halftime. That was my approach. So at halftime, Knicks down by 27. They ended up erasing that deficit, as you know. I start the Met game. And I didn't love the fact that Austin Warren was starting. I mean, it was pretty obvious just based on where we were in this rotation that David Peterson was just going to be used as a bulk guy. And I've liked David Peterson in that role as a guy who comes in and you can kind of maneuver him wherever you want. But I think what makes me nervous about Austin Warren as the starter is that he's not as dependable as Waskar Brazoban, who has now done it a lot. So the Austin Warren part was what kind of made me nervous. I looked at David Peterson getting the opportunity and figured, all right, there really aren't many other options at this point. Kodai Senga had a minor setback. He's still on rehab. He's apparently going to make a rehab start on Friday. We'll see how that goes. Tobias Myers is still stretching himself out down in the minor leagues. They've got Thornton, who they can call back. Eventually, they can call Tong back. But in the meantime, if you really want to give guys extra days and push McLain to the Atlanta series, all right, throw in a David Peterson, because there really isn't any other option. But it was depressing watching, A, how bad Austin Warren was. And he's been mostly good as a Met. So it's kind of unfortunate to rip him, but it is what it is. I mean, he comes in and instantly the first two guys are on base. He's struggling to throw strikes. He's falling behind hitters. He gives up a base hit to Jordan Walker. He gives up the ground ball to Mason Winn. I was so pissed at that ground ball by Mason Winn, because Gary Cohen, who I love, he really is the best, even if I rip him every once in a while, says Mason Winn hits a double play ball. And I was annoyed because I knew he was wrong. Off the bat, I'm like, this is not a double play ball. First of all, Mason Winn is quick. You're just not turning it. And so that turned into a second run. And it sucks. And I don't like when you go to your starter, now named the bulk guy, and you hand him the baseball and you're already losing. And there's something about that that I can't get used to. There's something about that that leads me back to not liking the whole opener bulk pitcher thing. Because it's grown on me. I've accepted it in certain scenarios. But when you get what happens on Wednesday, where before David Peterson, and I'm not trying to make excuses for David Peterson because he's not very good right now, and I'll take my L for believing that the first part of last season was more real than the last five starts where he completely fell apart. I think this season has proven that, unfortunately, the real David Peterson was the one at the end of the season. But I don't like handing him the baseball saying, oh, by the way, you're down 2-0. Good luck with that. I thought he was playing catch-up right from the beginning. Now, that's not an excuse for what happened in the third when there's two outs and nobody on, and he walks Mason Winn and then throws a first-pitch cookie that Nelson Velasquez hits for a two-run home run. That's on him. That's on him. And it's on him when, again, one out of nobody on, ahead of the count of Weatherholt, he's given up an infield hit, and he's walking Ivan Herrera, and then he's given up another home run, this time to Jordan Walker. That's on him. David Peterson was bad in this game. And I don't think he was bad necessarily because of the fact that he came into a game down 2-0. I'm just telling you, it's not ideal. I'm just telling you, it's not something I personally like. But let's get back to the offense. See, that's the thing about the first two games of the series. You know, take your pick on what you want to rip more. You want to rip the pitching? Fine, we just did with David Peterson. Now let's get to the LD offense. You get a leadoff double from Jared Young in the second inning down 2-0. Big inning. Chance to just get a run back. I say that all the time, but it's so true. Just get a run back. You got a runner on second and nobody out. Advance the runner. Get a sack fly. Make it 2-1. That's all you got to do. Simeon strikes out, can't advance the runner. Ewing grounds out, Alvarez strikes out. And so against Andre Pallante, they waste a leadoff double. In the third inning, that was even better. The third inning was an even bigger disaster. By the way, now they're down 4-0 because that was the inning where Peterson in the top of the inning gave up the two-run home run to Velasquez. You get the first two guys on base. Brett Beatty gets a hit, steals a base. Torrens gets hit by a pitch. You are set up with two on and nobody out and the top of the order coming up. Tough to kill Carson Bench because of how well he has played. But here comes Bo Bichette, big Bo Bichette, to strike out with two on and one out. And after Soto draws a walk, I know it's tough to kill Jared Young because of the way he played, but he comes up with the bases loaded and he grounds out. And so through the first three innings, on top of the nine innings from the day before, you've got 12 scoreless innings against St. Louis pitching. On top of you giving up seven runs, and the night before that, seven runs. So it was 14-0 Cardinals before Francisco Alvarez hit the two-run home run in the fourth inning. And after that, and this actually stunned me again. Because not that I think the Mets are coming back from 7-2 down, but when Alvarez hits the two-run home run in the fourth inning and all of a sudden it is a 7-2 game, it's like, all right, you got time to chip away. Do you realize that after that, the New York Mets did not get another base hit. That is crazy. And we're talking about Mats Fonson and Andre Pallante. And we're not talking about Chris Carpenter in his prime or Adam Wainwright in his prime. After Alvarez hits the home run, Pallante retires the next 8 in a row. Fonson retires the next 8 in a row. And the only base runner the Met offense would actually get was an 0-2 hit batsman by Eric Wagaman when they were down to their final strike. So again, David Peterson, bad. Austin Warren as an opener, bad. But it was the offense the first 2 days that did not give them a fighting chance. Let's read some of your emails from game two. That's always fun. The RicoB at gmail.com. Eli writes, I got a slogan for 2026. Instead of OMG, the slogan should be 4-3. Because they must lead the league on ground balls to the second baseman. He's so right. I'm looking at my scorecard. I see a ton of them. Bo Bichette in the first inning, 4-3. A.J. Ewing in the second inning, 4-3. Brett Beatty in the fourth inning, 4-3. Back-to-back 4-3s by Benj and Bichette in the fifth inning. Jared Young, 4-3. Eli, I got to tell you, at least for this game, very, very, very accurate. Jeff, in the middle of this game, writes, Evan and Hoff, as I write in the sixth inning of the middle game of this three-game series, clearly the star of the series is Sionel Perez. Yeah, he pitched well. I mean, to his credit. Perez came in with guys on base in the fifth inning when Mendoza finally had enough of David Peterson. And Perez, after giving up a hit, got a strikeout and then got the next three guys out. So, yes, I think that's a logical compliment for the Rico I'm the Man right now. Craig writes, time of death, 8:55 p.m. on June 10th, 2026. This is embarrassing. David Stearns inherited a good team and turned them into a joke. I held on a hope for as long as I could, but this team is just awful. We don't have a first baseman. We don't have a full rotation of pitchers. And we have a president who's incapable of doing anything that impacts this team in a positive way. I will mourn the baseball season that I was dumb enough to believe would be great. One, and when I get over it, I'll become an Orioles fan. I'll still listen to the Rico, though. Godspeed. I'll become an Orioles fan. I know Pete hit another home run. He's got 15. A couple of things that you said. They do have a first baseman. Now, I don't think they have a first baseman for the long term. I'm not saying that. But for the short term, for the moment, Jared Young is the first baseman. I know that feels like such a weird statement, especially for me to make, considering the amount of times I ripped poor Jared Young last year. But at this point in the season, you play who deserves it. That's where we are. You play who deserves it. Mark Vientos does not deserve it. In this moment, Brett Beatty is the third baseman, so not an option at first base. Ryan Clifford, I know we're all keeping an eye on him. He is hitting .213 in AAA. He's not ready, or at least his performance isn't telling us that he's ready. So when you look at what this team has, and you look at the options, and then you look at the performance, Jared Young is the first baseman. Now, if you're telling me he's not the long-term first baseman, of course, I'm not arguing that. I think in this moment, as we continue to talk Mets on these Ricos in the middle of June, I'm talking about this moment. There will be a time for the trade deadline. There will be a time for looking towards next season. But when you're sitting here in the middle of June, I want to say the Mets are still in it, but they are technically still in it. You have to play who gives you the best chance to win. And right now, he gives them the best chance to win. In terms of the rotation, dude, you're right. I mean, you look up and down this rotation, there isn't a lot of certainty. I mean, who are you certain about? And I guess that leads us to Christian Scott, who we were feeling most certain about. So the Mets made a decision to push Scott and McClain back. And that's why you saw this David Peterson bulk game in the middle of this series. I don't think you should be prioritizing the Braves over the Cardinals. I think all of the games matter at this point. The Mets just need to win games. I don't think you could overthink it, like this game matters more than others. Look, they're trailing both teams. I think if we're being realistic, the Braves are not a team they're catching. The Cardinals may not be a team they're catching, but at least there's that semblance of a chance that they're the team you're catching. So I don't think that move was necessarily about, hey, we prefer McClain against Atlanta. I think it was more, we want to give Scott and McClain an extra day, and we also want to split up the guys who are more likely to go deep into games. I was going to say you want to split up the more reliable starters, but it's tough to call Freddie Peralta and Christian Scott and even Nolan McClain at this point reliable, but they are the three starters in the Met rotation. They are traditional starting pitchers who are capable, even if it doesn't happen often, of going six innings or, dare I say, seven. So by inserting the Peterson day in the midst of this, you're now breaking up your bulk days by a couple of days. So I do think there is a value to that. As far as Christian Scott was concerned, his game on Thursday was weird. Weird, man. I mean, first of all, he gave up three home runs to the first seven batters he faced. And another one was a double, which I still don't know how it was fair. The double hit by Mason Wynn down the third baseline. But to the credit of Christian Scott, like, despite giving up three home runs to the first seven batters, he got out of the second inning, a runner on second, one out jam. He got out of the third inning, a two out runner on second jam. And then he pitched a 1-2-3 fourth, and I was hoping he was going to get through the fifth. And he came very close to getting through the fifth, but gave up a two out runner on first base hit to Jordan Walker. And at that point, pitch count of 88, guys on base, Lars Nupar had owned them so far. Mendy made the logical decision to take Scott out of the game. It's not a good pitching line. 4 2/3, seven hits, four runs. But there were some things about this start that you could at least take some solace in. The way he was able to at least settle down a bit after he gave up the three home runs. But you need more than that, especially when Scott gives up two of the three home runs right after the Met offense, which had been in such a slumber for the first two games of this series, explodes with their two home runs in the first four batters of the game, which seemingly came out of nowhere. Bo Bichette, who was in the middle of another offer. Jared Young, who I was just putting over. So the Mets explode for three runs after Scott gave up the one run to Burleson on the bomb in the first inning, and then he gives it all back. And the game then settled into this weird slog. It's 4-3 after an inning and a half, and that's pretty much it. Like, the Cardinals had opportunities to get big hits and score more runs, but they failed. I mentioned Scott wiggling through trouble in the second and third. A.J. Minter did a great job getting Nootbaar out. Again, very logical move by Mendoza. Scott, forget the pitch count. It was more two on, two out for a left-hand hitter who had hit a home run and a double off of him. I mean, not a matchup you want. But A.J. Minter comes in, gets that big out to get through the fifth, pitches a 1-2-3 sixth inning, and the Met bullpen went to work. I mean, he used the best of the Met bullpen, and so you saw Minter pitch, I thought, as well as he's pitched since coming back. Raley gave you a very good inning. Weaver gave you a 1-2-3 inning, and obviously Devin was able to make it hold up. But all the while, at 4-3, I'm thinking, is this offense actually capable of tying this game and going ahead? They had a few opportunities. Second inning, they got a leadoff hit by Alvarez, who had a couple of hits in his return. And Melendez, Benge, and Bichette come up empty. They get a two-out double by A.J. Ewing and missed the clutch. Okay, I love hearing how great his clutch numbers are. Marcus Semien grounds out to first base. They get nothing out of that. And then finally, Juan Soto comes up in the sixth inning with one out against the left-hander. Rips a double, so thank you, Juan Soto, for finally doing something, because at that point, he was 1-for-8 in this series and really going through a somewhat extended batting slump, and then there he is, Jared Young, coming through with the RBI single to tie this game up. They can't take the lead, though, in the fifth. They go down quietly in the sixth, and then Juan Soto delivers the behind-in-the-count solo home run, a positive Juan solo home run that we're all thrilled with. But I'll tell you, until Young got that hit in the fifth and even Soto hit the home run in the seventh, I was never that confident that despite how well the Met bullpen was pitching, that they were going to be able to scratch out enough runs. But great job by the Met bullpen. because Luke Weaver's been a different guy now for over a month. And Ron Darling said it. It's something I always say on the Rico. Not all saves are created equal. They're not. Some games are just more important than others. And when you've lost the first two games of a three-game series to the St. Louis Cardinals, you cannot lose this game. This is a, we were having fun on the air doing this, a must win, a can't lose, a gotta have, whatever those phrases mean. I'll just say this. You can't blow this game. And Devin Williams made it easy. Bottom of the order, struck out two guys, 1-2-3 inning. And so the clutch hit by Jared Young, the home run by Juan Soto, the Mets were able to make it hold up. And that means if you went out to Citi Field for any of these 3 days, you may not have had a good time. But on Thursday afternoon, you were able to celebrate. And you could have celebrated your Juan Soto highlight with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, as for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition, served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. I'll probably be indulging in the Takara Chuhai on Friday. The Mets welcome in the Atlanta Braves for a three-game series. They got another fireworks night coming up. And I think I may, on a hot night, because it is supposed to be hot, I may go a little Fuji Apple just to try to, refresh me on a hot Friday night. And maybe, dare I say, get the Mets a victory, which would be nice to see. Pete Hoffman, I know you're too busy usually watching Pete Alonso and the Baltimore Orioles these days, but they do salvage the final game of this three-game series. They now face the Atlanta Braves. How are you feeling about this team as they at least get one victory against the St. Louis Cardinals?
How am I feeling? I feel like crap. This is... So I talked about this going into the series, that the Mets would need to start to realistically win every series here on out, like win two out of three games, basically. And I heard a lot of people come back to me and go, you're putting it at 90 wins. 90 wins is too high of a number. I think they can make the playoffs with 85 wins. Can I just tell something to some – I'm just going to give people facts here. Please do me a favor with this whole new wild card system that's been here for a few years now. Give me the wild card team that has made the playoffs with 85 wins.
Last year, Cincinnati.
They had 85 wins?
They had less. They had 83 wins, dude. They had the same amount of wins as the Mets.
Did they really? Oh, I thought the answer was zero.
But by the way, if you're going to have like this big theory on the wild card race, can you come ready with the numbers, bro?
And I looked it up. I thought I looked it up. Year. I thought I came correct, and I apologize. But so, regardless,
yeah, regardless of the fact that the Reds made the playoffs with 83 wins, please continue.
Yes, thank you. You've already shot that down. Regardless, the fact is, they just can't do it. They don't have what it takes to even win a series. You say the St. Louis Cardinals aren't good. Well, if the Cardinals aren't good, then what the hell are the Mets? Because they are just awful.
Okay, so I want to attack the first thing you said, and I did this research a long time ago, so I don't have it necessarily with me right now. But when they announced the new playoff system, I didn't like it, and what I tried to do is expose how many bad teams would have made the playoffs under this format. So obviously this format began in 2022. So we could simply look at the last 3 years and see, hey, how many 83 win teams, 85 win teams have made the playoffs? It's not a lot of data. It's just a couple of years. But I went back to 2010, and Hoff, there are going to be seasons in which a sub 500 team makes the playoffs. It's going to happen. Just based on my research, it would have happened. There's going to be years in which it takes 89 wins to get in, like we saw a couple of years ago with the Mets. I mean, in 2024, the magical OMG season, you know, the Mets finished tied with 89 wins and the Diamondbacks won 89 games and didn't make the playoffs. So I admit there are going to be seasons in which 89 is not enough. But I don't think like you can definitively say 83 or 85 in the case you used is not a playoff year. I think we don't have enough of a sample size. If I had to predict right now, dude, I think in the American League especially, not that that helps us because we're not in the American League, I think there's a chance an under 500 team is going to make the playoffs. So I think you're wrong about that. Every year is different. Now, if your opinion is, hey, guys, I'm analyzing the National League. I think the Cubs are really talented. I think the Pirates are really talented. The Phillies are rising. And you don't think 85 is going to be enough just based on the teams. That's completely different. But history, we're still learning about. And if you go back deeper into time, there are going to be seasons in which bad teams with 82, 83, less than that wins, make the playoffs as a wild card team. 1,000%.
Right. Now, listen, we've all seen the division being won with less than you know, what with the year the Cardinals won the World Series in 2006, what were they, 82 and 80?
Yeah.
So we've seen ridiculous things happen.
But by the way, can I give you the specific one that I had in mind?
Please.
2014. Now, again, I'm not saying that that was the format. I'm saying if we use today's format for the 2015 season, remember the Mets won 79 games that year. It was not a good year. It was not a memorable year. The third wild card team that year would have been the 82-win Milwaukee Brewers, which means the 79-win Mets would have missed the playoffs by simply three games. So they're going to be years like that. Is this year that year? I lean towards yes. I lean towards yes, low 80s, because I think the Cubs will be fine. I think the Phillies will be fine. I don't think the Cardinals are that good. I know they just kicked our ass and they won four out of six games, but I mean, you look up and down this roster, you really think that's an 87-win team? If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But well, I do think there's a chance that that could be the case.
Well, the first thing with them, and I don't want to, we're not here doing the, what's a good, like,
Royce Clayton.
That, there you go. Like, Jordan Walker's turned into a stud this year. Where'd that come from? We all were waiting for it, but regardless, that being said, I disagree with you. I do think that the National League is, if you're going to go by just leagues, National League is a better league this year than the American League, hands down.
Top of the league. So
yeah.
The Dodgers, Atlanta, maybe Milwaukee, but I'm talking about the bottom, because let's face it, I think every Met fan who want to hold on a hope that this season can be salvageable, no one's saying the NL East. The NL East is truly over in regards to the Mets, at least. I mean, maybe the Phillies will make a run. They're not making up 15 and a half games. That's not happening, or 15 games as they go into this series. But in terms of a wild card spot, and that's the bottom layer of the National League, that's where I'm not sure how good it truly is.
Do you think that they could finish third in the East? Because then that maybe gives hope.
Okay, so remember, we're talking about two different things. Let's not conflate this. Number one, the National League and how many wins it's going to take to make the playoffs, versus are the Mets any good? I haven't in any part of this discussion told you I think we're good. I haven't said that. I'm merely arguing how many wins it may take to make the postseason and at least keep us interested in a season. And this is really going to be the test. And we're not there yet, but we're getting close. All right. We're not there yet, but we're getting close. How you attack the trade deadline. Because, and this is where it's tricky. Okay. So let me pull up the updated standings as of right now. We are recording this on Thursday night. So basically through Thursday's day of baseball, where the Mets are. Like I mentioned, they're 15 games out of the division. You could put that away. They're currently 5.5 games back of the last playoff spot, which is currently owned by the Padres at 35-32. Okay, so the six back in the loss column, 5.5 for a wild card spot. We'd all admit that's not a big number. It's not. It's a very gettable number. Where we run into trouble, or at least the debate, is what if that number's 3.5, but they're still under 500 and it's late July? Are you selling guys off despite mathematically being close? Are you buying guys despite, hey, we're not very good, but we're mathematically close? Or are you standing still? I'll tell you what, the archivist, that's what I call him now, Dan, used to be Negative Dan. He wrote this to me, and I'm curious your opinion on this. Are you ready?
Give it to me.
The subject is, you're going to hate this, but it needs to happen. And it's a picture of Francisco Alvarez with him saying, you have to trade him. Trade him. The value will never be higher. And you know he's turning into a pumpkin.
I don't hate that at all, first of all. I said that during the off season.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did. can I ask you a question? You know, like let's talk about Juan Soto. Like, if you were to explain Juan Soto, how would you explain him to somebody? Be like, describe him. Juan Soto plays for the Mets, but what is it? What
where about the him? Hell did that come from? I just asked you about trading Alvarez, and now you're asking me to describe Juan Soto.
Well, because I'm getting to a point here. Oh, okay. Long way to get there.
Yeah, I would describe him as a tremendous hitter who is still okay. searching for consistent big moments. He had one in the finale of the series against St. Louis, helped them win a game, but great hitter, still searching for those consistent big moments.
Okay, Francisco Alvarez, how would you describe him?
Always hurt.
No, you describe him as a fast healer.
That's what you want me to call him? Okay.
Yeah, that's what he is. He's a fast healer. He gets hurt all the time, but he's a fast healer. I don't trust him at all to stay healthy. I don't trust him. And when he's on the field, does he really – I know he's got some power. I know he hits a little bit here and there, but it's not enough. Does it change the pitching staff enough when he's behind the plate? I don't really know.
See, here's what scares me about what you're saying and what Dan is saying, and – I'll make this clear. I'm not telling you they can't trade him. I'm not saying, oh, how could you ever trade Francisco Alvarez? But I would tell you at 24 years old, he's 24 years old, as a guy who is a quick healer, I wouldn't give him away. So if you're telling me there is value to get back, and I'm not even sure what that is. I don't know if it's like another prospect. I don't know if it's someone like him who's young and hasn't put it all together. I'm not exactly sure what the person or the price tag would be, but I'm not in love with taking a 24-year-old catcher who's got a lot of potential and just dumping him. So it goes back to the old question on trades, which is, yeah, tell me what I'm getting. If you tell me what I'm getting, I can make a better judgment. I'm not actively looking to trade him, but I understand Dan's point. I understand your point that you can't trust him. He doesn't play enough. Look, here are the numbers that matter with Alvarez, and it's not his OPS, and it's not the percentage of guys he's throwing out at second base. It's games played. This year, he's at 39. Last year, he was at 76. The year before that, he was at 100. And in 2023, his first full season in the majors, it was 123. That number's gone down every single year. So, yes, he's a quick healer. He's also really injury prone. That's a problem.
Right, you know what also?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know what also another problem is, too? The person that will be handling all the trades is awful at it so far with the Mets.
I understand.
That's another concern I have too. So where I would like to trade Alvarez, maybe to get something, do I trust David Stearns to make the right move?
I understand. Our buddy Howard likes to give his take on the Rico on the Man right now, star of the series and the net negative. His votes for the star, Juan Soto, huge home run. And he was not big in games 1 and 2, but that home run in game 3 won the game. And his net negative is David Peterson. Wow, was he bad, and he helped cost us game 2. And as always, Howard does a great job supplying all of the stats. And it's funny, I appreciate him supplying all those stats. I write those stats down, and then when he sends them, I forget that he was going to do it. And I'm like, damn, I just worked my ass off for no reason. Let's start with the Rico on the Man right now, because I do think when you lose a series – and the Mets lost a series despite winning on Thursday — you do have a little extra value into the win than what a guy did in game 1 and 2 when they lost. I thought through the first two games of the series, there were very few guys I would even give honorable mention to. Maybe A.J. Ewing, just because he got on base a bunch of times, that really being it. But I think you end up, in my opinion, with really two strong candidates for the Rico on the Man right now. You do have Juan Soto. It was not the greatest series in the world. He ended up going 3 for 10 with a home run. He did have the double that scored the tying run in the 5th inning. And then obviously the home run that won the game. So two hits that were incredibly clutch as the Mets were trying to come back. But outside of that, it was very quiet. And I think the other candidate is Jared Young. I do think it is Jared Young. He took an 0-4 in game 1 of this series. I mean, quite frankly, nobody did anything in game 1 of this series. I guess if you look up and down the list, Benj was 1 for 4. Soto was 1 for 3. A.J. Ewing had the two hits. Alvarez had one hit. But Jared Young in game 2 of this series had a double that got wasted. And then in this game, he hits the home run in the 1st inning, which gave them a 3-1 lead. and he gets the game tying RBI single. And I also thought his defense was not bad at first base. I think the more he plays there, the better he gets. I think AJ Minter is an honorable mention for what he did out of the bullpen, kind of getting Christian Scott through that fifth inning, and really anybody else in the bullpen that you want to give love to. It's not Sionel Perez, despite that emailer from a while ago. So it's really Soto or Jared Young that jump out at me, especially because they were the ones that got the big hits in the one game they won. Where would you lean for the Rico I'm the Man right now?
First of all, I'd definitely throw Luke Weaver an honorable mention because it's now been 16 scoreless innings for him. So you got to give him some love. I'm sorry. When you say Jared Young, I laugh. But then when you go, his defense hasn't been that bad. I mean, that's what we're dealing with right now. It's so terrible. Yeah,
but it hasn't been bad. Like in this series, again, I'm not talking about handing him a gold glove or anything. I'm saying in this series, there was one play he didn't make. There was a low throw by Beatty that he didn't scoop. Like, I'm not saying he's perfect. I just thought he made a couple of decent plays around first base. That's all.
I would personally give it to Soto, though, just because he did. I mean, I hate to say it, but that may be his most impactful home run so far as a man. What a game.
I think that. What I am trying to do, and I'm not saying I have perfected this because I haven't, is to take the bias out when we do this. Like sometimes you want to give it to somebody. I think right now I want to give it to Jared Young. I do. I want to. He's become the first baseman. He's played well. Keith Hernandez loves his swing. I'd like to give it to Jared Young. But if I'm being fair and I'm taking out what I want, I do agree with you. I think the answer is Juan Soto because ultimately, tie game. Seventh inning, God knows if they're ever going to score a run. He hit the game-winning home run. And also, before Young tied the game, Soto was the one who set it up with the double. So,
right.
I'll agree with you that the answer to the trivia question on who should win the Rico I'm the Man right now star of the series is Juan Soto. And we'll make it official, which will make Juan Soto now a three-time award winner. He won it in the Cincinnati series that they lost, very similar series in which they lost the first two games and then salvaged the last one. And then he also won it in a series against the Nationals where they also lost two out of three. So Soto's, every time he wins, they lose two out of three. So he's not winning the Rico on the Man right now under great conditions, but we'll give it to him this week. Congratulations, Juan Soto. You are the man right now.
You're well-deserved. And let me tell you something, too. You know, we talked about, I know we joked about, or I joked about, Clay Holmes, that David Stearns found Clay Holmes as a starting pitcher, did a good job with that. Tyrone Taylor, he's really discovered as like that fifth outfielder. Jared Young, he's that you know, utility first baseman. He's done a really good job. So that's three players that David Stearns has been able to figure out and find.
I'm proud of you. You're breaking through in terms of taking your overall opinion on somebody and putting it aside to just gay, hey, this was a good move. It's tough to do. People have a tough time doing that. Like, try to get Craig to say something positive about LeBron James. He can't do it.
No, I can't do it.
It shouldn't be that difficult. He's a hell of a player.
He's one of the best players of all time, but Craig will never admit to that.
Right. And you don't like David Stearns. Totally fine. You probably represent most of the Met fan base right now. But you say, hey, look, Jared Young can't argue. That was a hell of a move. Where would the Mets be without Jared Young? The answer is instead of 8 games under 500, 11 games under 500. The hell's the difference? The net negative. Always fun, especially when you lose 2 out of 3. You have a lot of options. Freddie Peralta, 6 innings, 6 runs, is absolutely an option. David Peterson, 3 2/3 innings, 6 runs, is definitely an option. When it comes to the offense, it probably was Bo Bichette until he hit the 2-run home run, which was the only hit he had in this series. You know, Bo did not have the greatest series in the world, including coming up a few times with a chance to make a big impact. So I think Bo Bichette is a candidate. Marcus Semien had a very quiet series, going just 1 for 11, also coming up with some big opportunities and coming up small. So I think offensively, it's Semien and Bichette. I'd say Semien more than Bichette because at least Bowie did hit the 2-run home run. But I kind of lean towards David Peterson. because even though he came into a game in which he was already trailing 2-0, he could have kept it close. It could have been a game that remained relatively close. And instead, he's given up a 2-run home run to Nelson Velasquez. He's given up a 3-run home run to Jordan Walker. I know that we have a higher, I guess, expectation for Freddie Peralta, but ultimately he went 6 innings. David Peterson went 3 2/3 innings. So in a day in which it should be easier to go deep into a game because somebody already took care of the first, David Peterson crapped the bed, and he starts to make you question what role can he pitch in. So my vote for the net negative is David Peterson. Your thoughts?
I'm going to go Freddie Peralta on this because, like I said to you, you know, it's one thing to go 5-fly type of pitcher. He was 6-ass, and I can't have that.
6-ass?
Yeah, that's what he was. 6 innings, and it was terrible. I mean, that was awful. And I understand Peterson, we don't know who he is or where he's supposed to be right now. And we've been fighting this for years with, is he a bullpen arm? Is he a starter? But Freddie Peralta was supposed to be the ace, supposed to be brought in here, maybe potentially sign a huge contract. I want nothing to do with this guy. So maybe that's a bias right now that I'm sitting there and taking it out on him. But they were both putrid. To be honest with you, I'd almost give it more to Austin Warren because Warren started off the game with the purpose of, hey, just get out the first three batters. And he couldn't do that. How many guys got on base?
Wasn't good. He was not good. He was not good.
Yeah, I
think they're all fair candidates. Like, I'm not defending any of them. I think the answer is David Peterson. I will overrule you on that.
I will not fight you on David Peterson.
I know you can't. I know you can't. So David Peterson is a two-time net negative. It's funny. I'm looking at the net negatives this season. A lot of two-timers. So Bo Bichette's won it 5 times. Marcus Semien has won it 3 times. And then you've got Nolan McLean, Mark Vientos, Juan Soto, and now David Peterson. The last time David Peterson won the net negative, you got to go all the way back to the Giants series. It was actually the 3rd series of the year. Mets won 3 out of 4, but the one loss they had, David Peterson gave up 6 runs in 4 1/3 innings. What I would do moving forward, because I always want to offer answers instead of just bitching about how everybody sucks. Obviously, Kodai Senga is going to make another rehab start. I don't know what Kodai can do that would give any of us the confidence to bring him back here. Like, Kodai's got to just pitch in AAA. It is what it is. And if you want to call it a rehab assignment, if they have to call him up and get permission for him to be optioned, whatever it is, I think Senga needs more time in AAA. Tobias Myers pitched 2 1/3 innings at AAA on Thursday. So days-wise, he could potentially be lined up to eventually come back. And even if he's not a full-time starter, just go 3 or 4 innings, because what's the difference? You know, David Peterson hasn't gone that deep into games. So I think David Peterson sticks around, but he's probably just back in the bullpen as just a reliever, like a traditional long man reliever. But I think Tobias Myers, once he's worked up enough and enough days have gone by, I've got to look back on when they sent him down. He's the guy that should come up. And I can't even say be a starting pitcher, just be a guy that can eat a bunch of innings, because that's where we are these days with how they use rotations.
But Ev, to me, this is so frustrating because it's like, I don't need to be this traditional, well, a starting pitcher needs to start. But the reality is they've tried everything, and they can't get length out of any starting pitcher. They can't get a good opener. They can't really do anything productive.
So what's your solution?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
Because you're right now you're bitching, and I'm saying let's offer – my solution is Tobias Myers. He's not starting, but he's just another guy who can go 3 or 4 innings potentially. I don't think they have a starting pitching option right now unless they're confident that Jack Weininger is ready to come up, or they're going to bring back Thornton or bring back Tong. So to me, it's more throwing Tobias Myers into the mix. That would be my answer temporarily.
Do they have, and I haven't done the research on this, so I apologize, but I thought maybe you would. Do they have anybody in the minors that pitches 5 to 6 innings deep?
I mean, Tong, Thornton are 2 guys, and Weininger. Those are 3 young starting pitchers. Obviously, we saw Tong. We saw Thornton. It was brief. It was only the 1 start. But those are the young starting pitchers. That's where they can go. Once they deem that they're ready, that's the route you can go. I think until then, Myers had mostly pitched well. And the reason he was sent down is because of the numbers games that they were facing. It was a while ago now when he got sent down. Because I remember he got sent down after Freddie Peralta.
It's been about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. So he's ready to come back when they're ready to call him back. As far as the way they're going to line things up this weekend against Atlanta, it's going to be Nolan McClain on Friday. Fingers crossed. I mean, Nolan McClain has certainly shown signs of getting out of his little funk that he was in. This is going to be a challenge, even though the Braves just lost Ronald Acuna Jr., but Matt Olson's having a big year, and the Braves are just tough. They've been great this season, despite some recent struggles against the White Sox. Spencer Strider is going to be on the mound for Atlanta. He hasn't been the same. Manaea will pitch Saturday in some kind of role. I assume they'll continue the Brazoban open, and then Manaea comes in. And then here comes Freddie Peralta with a chance to bounce back on Sunday. Look, I could sit here and repeat the same stuff. They got to win the series. I mean, they need to cut into this deficit. They basically haven't. They've been doing a lot of treading water recently. Now, the good news is it looks like we're finally seeing the end of the tunnel with Francisco Lindor. He is resuming baseball activities. There's a chance he could be on a rehab assignment in a week. So it's not nuts that we see Lindor prior to the All-Star break. And that's a huge help. And I think it also changes a little bit of this lineup construction right now, because they've settled in on Jared Young's the first baseman. Vientos has been completely lost in terms of his job status, but you still have that DH role that's wide open. MJ Melendez. I like the idea of Alvarez doing it. I don't think it's nuts. Now there's a risk because they only have two catchers on this roster, but I don't hate it. But once they get Lindor back, it opens up the door to Beatty and Young switching off between first base and DH. Very left-handed, but it just makes the lineup better. It deepens them. It gives them more options. I'm not worried about who goes down at this point. It's probably Vidal Brujan. I mean, he's basically on the roster doing nothing, so I guess that's your answer. But the Lindor return is certainly a positive, but there's no guarantee when he comes back he's going to hit. You know, all of a sudden, Lindor, who wasn't doing anything prior to his injury, is just going to come back and tear it up. But again, they've got to cut into this deficit. I look at the All-Star break. Let me count the games up. You got three in Atlanta, or at home against Atlanta. Three with Cincinnati, three with the Phillies. 9. 4 with the Cubs is 13. 3 with the Phillies is 16. 3 with the Blue Jays is 19. Then you got 3 with the Braves is 23. 26. They got 29 games before the All-Star break. All right? 29 games. Mostly against good teams, though they finish against some weak teams, that homestand against Kansas City and Boston. You got 29 games. Can you go, I'm trying to think, is 16 and 13 acceptable? That gets you to 5 games under .500? Would you feel good about 5 games under .500 coming out of the All-Star break? Or does it actually need to be a little bit better than that? I think it's got to be better than that.
I think it's got to be better than that. I think you got to be close. I think you have to be. I know that this is not too optimistic, but this is too much with this team, especially. I think you have to be 500.
I don't think you have to go that far. I don't. I think my answer is 17 and 12. If you go 17 and 12 in the next 29 games, you're 3 games under .500. And now you're right there. Now you're within striking distance. But look, to your point and to the discussion we had earlier, we'll get a better sense about this National League by the time we get there. So that'll be a big determining factor. Like right now, the third wildcard team is above 500. It's not like it's a team under 500. So I think we'll see how things play out. But yeah, and let's save this. I want to save this. Episode 705, we said 29 games till the All-Star break. Evan said, you got to go 17 and 12. That gets you to -3 at the break. And you're saying they got to go. I got to do math on this because you're saying they got to be at 500.
They needed to go 20-9.
Well, that would put them above 500.
Oh.
Your math is bad.
Everything's bad.
18-11 gets you to a game under 500. Is that okay?
All right, fine. A game under 500.
You know what's so crazy about math? I say 17-12. You're at 18-11. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah. But it's a big difference, though.
It's a bit, right. It's a difference between. It's okay, difference. 3 games under .500 and a game under .500. I think the moral is they got to cut into this. That's the point. They have not. Like, they're not chipping away. The hope was they would chip away. They haven't. They've been treading water now for a while. So hopefully that starts to change. Let me finish with a positive email. This is from Ivy. Ivy writes, is it bad that I'm having a love affair with Jared Young? I think he has to be in big consideration for the I'm the Man right now. And also, of this point, has to be a pretty good grade in the postseason awards. Hope all is well. Thank you for your hard work. Yeah, I think that he has become a valuable piece of this team. That's how, and he's the first baseman of this team. That's where he is. Is he going to remain the first baseman? I don't know. I've declared like three different guys the first baseman of the Mets over the course of this season. So I hope it remains, but I think that we have all given the proper credit that Jared Young deserves. We're going to probably do a drive home after game one of the series against Atlanta. I'm taking my oldest son to the Brave game on Friday night. It's fireworks night, so it'll be, I guess, a half hour after the game is over. If you want to hear a little instant breakdown of Mets Braves on a Friday night. And then, as always, we give you our series recap at some point after a series is over that day. So they'll wrap up the Braves series Sunday afternoon. So sometime Sunday night, if you want to subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page or download the Rico Bronya wherever you download your podcast, and you will never miss an episode. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for producing Hoff. And thank you now for sleeping, Jet. Thank you for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.